Okay, welcome to Bright Videos News for March 3rd, 2026. It's a Tuesday. I'm Mike Adams. And as always, thank you for joining me. Remember, you can catch all of my interviews and other content at brightvideos.com. And as my new infographics are becoming very popular, people are loving them. I'm getting a lot of thank yous about the new infographics. They explain all these concepts. You can find those at the end of each story at naturalnews.com. That is articles that I've published. Not everybody else's, not all the other writers, but mine have infographics. And people are loving those infographics, so check them out. I'm also posting them on brighteon.social. So, you know, that's our uncensored social media network. You can find them there, even if I'm censored on X or other platforms. You can find me at brighteon.social. Okay, so I've got a couple of reports for you here today. One of them based on something that Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, said earlier, which is just shocking everybody. He said that the U.S. can only manufacture 6 or 7 air defense interceptor munitions per month, while Iran can manufacture 100 ballistic missiles and thousands of drones per month. Right there, Marco Rubio is admitting that we can't keep up with Iran. And it turns out that the interceptor munitions are desperately short in supply and they're running out right now. So I'm going to cover that in a report and the reality of that situation, which is rather shocking. And then Trump later on after that, Trump tweeted that, no, we have unlimited supplies and we can fight forever wars. Well, he said we can wage war forever because we have unlimited ammunition. So it's like typical Trump style, you know. It's the biggest steak at the greatest golf course at the most beautiful resort, you know. We have unlimited ammo, but not really. We don't have unlimited ammo, and we're only days away, probably, I mean, I'm guessing, 1 to 2 weeks max before we run out. And then what happens? Yeah, then it's like a, I guess it's an open range. It's like, what do they say, shooting fish in a barrel? Isn't that a saying, shooting fish in a barrel? I don't know, that sounds dangerous. I don't know that I would want to be that close to a barrel of water if you're shooting into it. And I don't think you'd get much fish left, you know. It would be like fish bisque or something after that, you know, because it'd be shredded fish. But whatever. That's what it's going to be like if the U.S. runs out of munitions. So that's where we're headed. So I've got these two special reports, and then I've got several interviews that I've done part one and part two of several different interviews, and I'm going to play for you at least one additional part two interview today with either Maria Z or Garland Nixon or Alex Zek. I'm not sure which one it's going to be, but we're going to get another part two interview for you here today following the special reports. So we've got a lot to share today. Thank you for all your support. Thank you for calling for peace. Thank you for maintaining your critical thinking capability here as we are in some very, very strange territory right now in terms of what's happening in the world. And thank you for supporting us. HealthRangerStore.com, storable food, iodine, everything you're going to need to help you get through whatever's happening. We still don't know exactly what's happening, but surely it's good to be prepared, right? So thank you for your support. Enjoy the two special reports here and the interview. I think you'll learn a lot from today's analysis, and enjoy the rest of the show. Okay, we're going to start off this special report about U.S. vulnerabilities in terms of lack of a munitions manufacturing supply chain by allowing Marco Rubio to explain it to you. Remember, Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, who President Trump called Little Marco when he was running against him. But now he lets Marco Rubio run around the world, you know, threatening everybody. Here's what Marco Rubio had to say, which shocked everybody. It's only 15 seconds. Check this out.
They are producing, by some estimates, over 100 of these missiles a month. Compare that to the 6 or 7 interceptors that can be built a month. They can build 100 of these a month, not to mention the thousands of one-way attack drones that they also have.
So right there, Marco Rubio just, I don't know if this slipped out or what, but he said that Iran can make over 100 ballistic missiles a month. And that's probably a low estimate, by the way. And that the United States can only make 6 or 7 interceptor units. And he also said, don't forget that Iran can make thousands of one-way attack drones per month. Per month, yeah, because Iran is very capable of manufacturing drones, obviously. And by the way, just in the last day, let's see, one of those Iranian drones struck the U.S. embassy in Riyadh. That's in Saudi Arabia. Also, Bahrain intercepted 70 Iranian ballistic missiles and 59 drones targeting its territory. Well, the thing is that Bahrain and the Saudis and Qatar and these other nations, even the UAE, they largely rely on U.S. interceptors, these anti-air defense systems or munitions that are used in the Patriot systems, for example, you know, Patriot missile systems. Well, what did Marco Rubio just tell us? That the U.S. can only make 6 or 7 interceptors a month. So, and by the way, did you know that the U.S. typically fires 2 interceptors for every incoming missile or drone? So, per month, the United States can manufacture really only enough interceptors to fire against 3 or maybe 4 incoming drones or missiles. Whereas Iran can manufacture thousands of drones and at least 100 ballistic missiles and probably many more. So what does that tell you? It tells you that as soon as the United States runs out of munitions, which will happen roughly, it's estimated, within 7 to 10 days, then there's no more, there's no defense. No defense at all. And then Iran can just plug away and hit any target it wants, including U.S. naval vessels that are within range, which is why they're fleeing. Or the U.S. can hit any targets in Israel that it wants, or any military base targets in the area that it wants. Just on and on. There are no defenses after the U.S. runs out. So the clock is ticking on this. The clock is ticking. And the U.S. is going to run out of munitions. It's being reported that the U.S. is preparing a major uptick in strikes on Iran, but that supplies of Tomahawk missiles and SM-3 missiles are running out. They're running out. So how long can the U.S. keep this up? Not much longer. And so far, we don't see any evidence that there's going to be a spontaneous regime change in Iran. Even though the Ayatollah Khamenei was assassinated by Israel with the help of the United States, and clearly the U.S. thought that that was going to result in a spontaneous mass uprising and everybody was going to cheer and build monuments to Trump, and they're going to paint the buildings orange or something, I don't know. That didn't happen. If anything, it caused the Iranian people to become even more confident in their ability to endure. And this is something that America doesn't understand and that the West doesn't understand, is the ability of the people of Iran to endure. And you know why they've built that up to be such an incredible trait? Because they've lived under sanctions for decades, just like the people of Cuba have, and just like the people of Russia have, especially under the former Soviet Union. They learned how to live on less because they had less. They didn't have the material luxuries of the West. They didn't have, you know, all the junk food restaurants on every street corner that we have in the United States, that we have in the UK or other Western nations. So when you go to war with a nation that you have put under sanctions for decades, which is the case with Iran, you're actually going to war with people that have themselves had to become extremely resourceful. Otherwise, they wouldn't have survived this long. They're extremely resourceful, and in the culture of Islam, especially in Iran, there's a certain amount of suffering that is expected. at least this is my understanding of it. I'm not an expert on, you know, the religious practices of Iran, but my understanding is that suffering is something that the Iranian people can endure, and they almost have an expectation of enduring. And this was also true with the Palestinians in Gaza. They could endure tremendous suffering. And, you know, the carpet bombing of their cities and towns and churches and hospitals, and yet they still fought back, sometimes wearing sandals and carrying, you know, sticky bombs and putting them on Israeli armored transport vehicles, etc., and blowing them up, or even tanks. You know, the Palestinian people showed real courage. And you're also going to see that from the Iranian people. Whereas a lot of U.S. troops, not all of them, you know, not the special forces, etc., but sort of mainstream U.S. troops, they've lived a pretty comfy life relative to the people of Iran. You know, they're overweight, they're overfed, they don't train as hard, they don't know what suffering is like. They really don't. And so you throw them into a war with Iran, and it's going to go badly for U.S. military forces, very badly. And that's where this is all headed. But Marco Rubio just admitted that the U.S. can't keep up in terms of industry. Now, this also involves China because of rare earths. And a lot of these munitions that are manufactured, they rely on certain rare earths. For example, gallium, as I covered previously, gallium is used in radar systems. And also, there's graphite. Graphite is used in stealth aircraft. And you notice the U.S. has already lost four aircraft. Four F-16s were already shot down, destroyed, or three or four. The numbers keep moving around. Already shot down and gone. To my knowledge, the U.S. hasn't yet lost a stealth aircraft, but that's probably coming. And when they lose stealth aircraft, they won't be able to replace them, not easily, because the graphite that's necessary to build them comes from China. Certain types of graphite, 100% of the world supply comes from China. And since China is blocking a lot of exports to the United States for strategic reasons, the U.S. can't replace a lot of these aircraft if they are lost. Now, the nation of Qatar was forced to shut down all of its gas output. That's LNG, liquid natural gas, or liquefied natural gas, which is its main export. That's been halted now, completely halted, because of the strikes from Iran, which shows you the economic repercussions of Iran's attacks that are hitting infrastructure or threatening infrastructure in the Gulf nations that allow themselves to be used by the West to host U.S. military bases. And right now, Qatar is doing a relatively good job of intercepting, you know, hundreds of missiles and drones. The UAE is intercepting also hundreds of missiles and drones, etc. But even right now, these Gulf states are beginning to publicly scream about the fact that they desperately need additional ammunition, you know, interceptor ammunition, because they're about to run out. So Trump has apparently, this has been reported, Trump is ordering the THAAD anti-air defense systems, those are the high altitude systems, to be moved out of South Korea. It's like, hey, Korea, sorry, we need your air defense systems. So they're going to pull all this out of South Korea and shift it over to, I guess, Gulf states, put it in Qatar, put it in the UAE. Well, then that leaves South Korea vulnerable to, of course, attacks from North Korea and China. And those THAAD interceptor systems were a big part of the strategy to, you know, persuade North Korea that they could not be effective. Now that that's going to be gone, it's beginning to look like the U.S. military is running out of so much equipment. Remember, they shipped everything to Ukraine over the last, 4 years, and a lot of that's already been destroyed. But they've run out of not only the Patriot missile batteries, they've run out of the THAAD systems, and they're running out of the munitions that go into those systems. You know, it's starting to look like the U.S. military is stretched thin and desperate, and is about to reach a point where it simply cannot protect itself or Israel or the Gulf states. I mean, we're probably only a week or maybe 2 weeks away from that point being reached, which is why Trump is ramping up attacks, trying to break the back of Iran within the next week before the U.S. munitions run out. And possibly that will succeed. But if it doesn't, then the U.S. is in a lot of trouble, tremendous trouble in that region, because it has no additional way to protect itself. Now, proving that he is living in an alternate reality, President Trump posted that all the stockpiles are great. Here's what he posted on his Truth Social platform. He says, quote, "The United States munitions stockpiles have, at the medium and upper medium grade, never been higher or better. As was stated to me today, we have a virtually unlimited supply of these weapons." Really? That's not what Marco Rubio just said. He continues, "Wars can be fought forever and very successfully using just these supplies." He says, I mean, so Trump is basically performing the meme of forever wars. He continues, "At the highest end, we have a good supply, but are not where we want to be. Much additional high-grade weaponry is stored for us in outlying countries." In other words, he's going to go strip weapons from Europe and from South Korea and probably Taiwan and Japan. He's going to send out a memo to all these countries that bought all these weapon systems and say, well, we need them back. We need them back. Yeah, that's how desperate Trump is. And obviously this post is the opposite of reality. You know, Trump is posting this to try to pretend like we have plenty of supply when clearly we don't. But he goes on, he says, "Sleepy Joe Biden spent all of his time and our country's money giving everything to P.T. Barnum Zelensky of Ukraine, hundreds of billions of dollars worth, and while he gave so much of the super high end away for free, he didn't bother to replace it. Fortunately," Trump says, "I rebuilt the military in my first term and continue to do so." So that doesn't make sense, because Joe Biden's term happened after Trump's first term. So Trump is saying that Joe Biden gave away all our weapons to Ukraine, but I, Trump, rebuilt the military before Joe Biden was president, and that's why we have lots of supplies, right? So that makes no sense unless Trump is traveling in a time machine. So he concludes, he says, "The United States is stocked and ready to win big! Exclamation marks. Thank you for your attention to this matter." Right? So you can pretty much file that under complete BS. Kim.com says, "Trump is panicking. Assume the worst. Prepare for Islamist attacks in the U.S. brought to you by the CIA/Mossad. And that's exactly where this is going. False flag attacks in the United States. That's where this is headed. So the bottom line here is that Marco Rubio knows that the U.S. military is about to run out of munitions. Trump knows, but he's trying to bluff everybody because, you know, he builds casinos. So, yeah, you know, the House always bluffs. The House always wins, except not when it's kinetic, you know. Everybody in the military knows, but they can't talk about it because, you know, of course, national security, they don't want to present the U.S. as being weak. For my part, I'm just going on public information. I don't have any secret insider information, but it's obvious to me. I mean, we had a panic about munitions even in the last 2 years, trying to find enough munitions to give to Ukraine. In fact, there was a panic last summer about Israel not having enough munitions, and that's why Israel panicked and Trump panicked after the 12-day war, or towards the end of it there. Israel contacted Trump and begged Trump to stop the war because Israel was running out of munitions and they were going to be left completely vulnerable with a total failure of the Iron Dome. So since last summer, what has it been? You know, maybe 9 months. In 9 months, how many more munitions have been manufactured? Not that many. According to Marco Rubio, it's only six or seven a month. So, you know, maybe we've got 60 additional munitions that have been manufactured, possibly. That's gone in one day, less than one day. That's gone in, you know, a couple hours of Iran launching missiles and drones. And also, these munitions are extremely expensive. Some of them cost a few million dollars each. I mean, it's crazy expensive to do this. So the bottom line is the U.S. is going to run out of ammo for air defense within, let's say, 1 to 2 weeks, to put it, you know, pretty wide range there. And that is driving the U.S. to a point of sheer desperation where there's a risk of the U.S. going to nuclear weapons in order to just desperately try to stop Iran. The other thing the U.S. could do is they could negotiate and say, we'll lift all the sanctions and we'll pay you trillions of dollars for the damage that we've done. But that would be an admission of guilt by the U.S., and so that's not going to happen. And, of course, Israel would never sign off on that. And since Trump is Netanyahu's little bitch, then Trump would never do that either. So, you know, keep that in mind. This is going to escalate. It's going to go badly. It's going to go badly for America. And guess who's watching this whole thing? China. China's watching this and seeing the U.S. expend every last bit of air defense munitions that it has. Russia is watching and thinking about what this means for its conflict with Ukraine, because Russia is going to clearly realize that, hey, the U.S. can't defend itself against our air attacks in Ukraine. And China's going to realize, hey, we could take Taiwan, because clearly Taiwan's going to be commanded to ship all their air defenses to Israel. You know, because when it comes to Zionists versus Taiwanese, guess who Trump picks? He picks the Zionists first. Of course. So China and Russia are watching as the U.S. basically plays all of its hands pointlessly, you know, in a conflict with Iran that the U.S. cannot win, and that leaves the U.S. incredibly vulnerable to whatever China wants to do, or whatever Russia wants to do, or whatever other nations might want to do along the way, including North Korea. So that's where we are. This is not a good situation, and the U.S. military grows weaker by the day, weaker by the day. Of course, Iran is getting the snot bombed out of it also. There's no question about that. A lot of targets have been destroyed in Iran. And I guess the real question is, what runs out first? You know, U.S. munitions, including air defense munitions, or targets to bomb in Iran? And even though there's a lot of destruction of certain ammo depots and surface targets, I very much doubt that the U.S. is having much of an effect on bombing the, you know, the deep underground bases from which many of the missiles launch, the ballistic missiles, etc. Then again, that's just a guess, because, you know, we can't tell what's happening. We don't have satellite imagery. We can't do bomb assessments or anything. We don't even know where the targets are. And what we do know is that we're not being told the truth by the U.S. We're being given this rosy picture. Everything's great. We're winning. We have unlimited supplies. We can fight forever. That's what Trump just said. We can go to war forever. And Marco Rubio says, no, we can't, because we're going to run out of ammo here in short order. You know, probably Trump is going to call Marco Rubio and tell him to shut up. Stop telling people the truth about that. You have to BS everybody, you know. That's what Trump's going to do. So the situation is not good. If you want to stay informed on all of this, of course, you can catch my videos at brightvideos.com. And my articles and analysis, including my very popular infographics that people are loving, those are at naturalnews.com. And if you click on my articles, you'll find an infographic at the bottom of almost every article. And I'm posting a lot more infographics on social media, including brightown.social. And I'm also on X at HealthRanger. Finally, you notice that silver plunged yesterday. Even though gold was rising, silver was plunging. A lot of manipulation in the silver markets. It's just so bizarre how much silver is going down. But it's also potentially a buying opportunity depending on your investment strategy. So if you want to get silver or gold, then go to metalswithmike.com. And that forwards you to Battalion Metals, and we are an affiliate of Battalion Metals, and that's a company that was co-founded by Tucker Carlson. And they're highly trusted, very competitive pricing. They don't run bait and switch tactics. They don't do, there's no shenanigans there. It's just high integrity, honest, you know, Ron Paul supporter type of people that run Battalion Metals. So again, metalswithmike.com will take you there. If it's a good choice for you, depending on what you want to do financially, then pick up some gold and silver. But don't consider me your financial advisor, because I'm not. So do your own research, make up your own mind, and we'll see. We'll see where all this goes. But the dollar is probably in trouble. Gold and silver will almost certainly hold value over time, although there can be a lot of volatility, obviously, in the short run. Oil is going to trend higher, obviously. Natural gas is going to trend higher. Energy costs are going to go up. Transportation is going to be severely disrupted, etc. So the world is about to become a much more frightening place where costs go up and supplies go down, or supply chains go down. And sadly, the U.S. is going to run out of ammunition very soon here. And then what happens after that is anyone's guess. I don't know. Does this whole thing go nuclear? I sure hope not. But thank you for listening, and pray for peace. Pray for humanity at this point. I'm Mike Adams. Take care. In this special report, we're going to be looking at why Trump has brought us to, well, the last chapter of the U.S. empire, and Trump's fatal decision to attack Iran is almost certainly going to end in the destruction of the U.S. empire as we know it. And that's a prediction of Professor Jiang, who, of course, is the host of the popular YouTube channel called Predictive History. And he was recently on a show called Breaking Points, and he had some really profound things to say in explaining why he sees this. And so I'm going to play a couple of minutes for you here, and then I'll have my comments and explain why I think he's correct. But let's take a listen.
So given my analysis of how the war is progressing, I think that Iran has many more advantages over the United States. The reality is that right now, it's a war of attrition between the United States and Iran, and the Iranians have been preparing 20 years for this conflict. In their eschatology, in their religion, this is a war against the great Satan. They've had many practice runs. Last June was a 12-day war when the Iranians were able to examine, analyze the strike capacities of both the Israelis and the Americans. And they've had a lot of time, 8 months, to prepare fully for this new attack. They, through their proxies, the Houthis, Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Shia militias, have been able to really grasp the American mentality. And now they have a pretty good strategy of how to weaken and ultimately destroy the American empire. So what the Iranians are doing is they're waging war against the entire global economy. And so they are striking the GCC countries. And not only are they striking GCC countries, American bases, but they're going after the critical energy infrastructure of these bases. They blocked off the Strait of Hormuz, and eventually, they will go after the water desalination plants, which is the lifeblood of these nations, because they don't have fresh water supply. In fact, the water desalination plants provides 60% of the GCC's water supply.
All right, I'm pausing it right here because I just want to comment on what he said, that the water desalination plants are going to be targeted. I think at least one of them is already destroyed in Israel. But also that Iran is actually waging war against the Western economic infrastructure. That is, the Western world depends on energy from these Gulf states. And that energy can only come out of these Gulf states if there's not a state of war with Iran, because of the Strait of Hormuz, and also because Iran is, of course, causing chaos in these countries that host U.S. military bases. So not only is Iran sending a very powerful ballistic message, in essence, to these Gulf states and saying, look, if you host American military bases, then you're giving aid to the enemy. And we're going to make you pay a price for that, such as launching drones at your hotels or airports or whatever the case may be. But it's more than that. It's the fact that Iran can make some of these areas literally unlivable by cutting off the water supply. And what a lot of people don't know is that by closing the Strait of Hormuz, that also cuts off the food supply to millions of people in the UAE or Qatar or Kuwait, for example, or parts of Iraq, etc. I know there are other routes in northern Iraq, but the ports that open up into the Persian Gulf there, which requires the Strait of Hormuz to be able to sail through, those ports, that's where most of the food comes in. I should clarify for the cities, for the main cities there. Surely, you know, rural people in rural Iraq or whatever, they are a lot more self-sufficient, just like rural people anywhere. But for the cities, which is where most of the people are by definition, they depend on food coming in by ship. And the water desalination plants are absolutely critical for survival because of the climate there. Extremely dry, arid, you know, very little rainfall, depending on the country. The rainfall in many places is less than 10 inches a year. I mean, it can be an extreme desert, you know, depending on the region there. So it doesn't actually take much for Iran to make these areas inhospitable by destroying certain things. But even beyond that, they can make these areas economically unviable. And how do they do that? Well, number one, they destroy the tourism industry. Because if hotels are starting to get bombed by drones or missiles, who wants to stay at a hotel? Who wants to travel to Dubai or you know, any major city in the area? Because they could potentially be under attack. But even beyond that, it's the insurance rates. See, in order to conduct a commercial operation in any of these countries, you normally would want to have insurance against loss or fire, or even sometimes insurance against disruptions. Well, oh, and don't forget insurance on cargo vessels in the sea. Well, those insurance rates just skyrocketed, and in many cases, you now can't get insurance. So if you're trying to newly insure a cargo ship that is going to sail, you know, through the Persian Gulf or through the Strait of Hormuz, insurers won't even touch it at the moment. Or if they do, they're going to charge you, you know, insane rates that make it non-profitable to even function. But the same thing is also true for commercial entities or factories that may exist in these various countries from, you know, Kuwait or UAE or what have you. Or even, let's say, the natural gas, oil harvesting fields, transportation, infrastructure, and storage facilities in Qatar. Those facilities are, of course, insured. But they're also sitting ducks. Same thing with the oil fields in Saudi Arabia. You would imagine that some of those, and maybe the refineries, etc., they probably have some level of insurance. But now they are essentially uninsurable. So Iran didn't have to actually destroy everything in order to achieve this result. They just had to make everything uninsurable, which means that you can't function as a business or a refinery or, you know, an LNG transporter or even a grocery store for that matter. That's what's happening right now. Iran is making these countries pay a price for being so-called allies of the U.S. And a lot of these countries are realizing that being an ally of the U.S. doesn't count anyway because the U.S. isn't defending them at all. So you can imagine the original sales pitch from the U.S. or the Pentagon back before these bases were built was, hey, you let us put an American military base here and we'll protect you. You know, we'll have anti-air defense systems. We'll have radar installations. We'll have jet fighters on the ground that can be scrambled and intercept whatever. We'll protect you. And it's turned out that's not true at all. These nations are taking hits in their cities. They're taking hits in their ports. They're taking hits on the military bases, of course. And the U.S. is incapable of stopping most of the incoming missiles and drones. And that's actually going to get much worse as the U.S. runs out of interceptor munitions in the next week or so. So it won't be long. If Iran keeps up this pace, it will not be long before there are some Gulf state nations that tell the United States, it's time to evacuate, get out, take your base and leave. You're no longer welcome here because the cost is too high. That's what Iran is inflicting upon those Gulf states right now, including Qatar, by the way, perhaps even emphasizing Qatar. Or Qatar, as some people say. I think it's Qatar. But anyway, that's what's happening. Let's continue with Professor Jiang here and see what else he has to say.
So if a drone, and you know, these drones cost $50,000, if they wiped out a desalination plant in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and it's a city of 10 million people, right? They'd be out of water in 2 weeks. And right now, the Iranians have de facto closed off the Strait of Hormuz, and the GCC gets 90% of its food from the Strait of Hormuz. So I know a lot of people are talking about the disruptions to the global economy, but right now, the Iranians are actually threatening the very existence of Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, Qatar.
Okay, I'm pausing it one more time because what Professor Jiang just said was that Iran is threatening the very existence of these nations, such as Saudi Arabia and Qatar, etc. And that is absolutely true. And because of the food and water and security issues that we've just covered, it turns out that you really can't exist as a Gulf state nation unless Iran agrees to leave you alone. And until recently, Iran has left these nations alone, largely. But now that's changing. Iran is launching drones and missiles and setting things on fire and blowing things up, including military bases, obviously. These countries, their airports are shut down, their tourists are freaking out and panicking in some cases. And, you know, who's going to want to go to Dubai after this if you don't know if you can ever get out? And if you're stuck there, you can't have, maybe you won't have access to water or food, and probably certainly not a firearm either, you know. So and not even some liquor to get you through if that's your thing. So this is a nightmare scenario for these Gulf state nations. If Iran continues to bomb them or, you know, strike them with missiles, they cannot function. And the United States clearly cannot protect them. So either the United States of America finds a way to utterly destroy Iran and stop this, which, of course, that's what Trump and Rubio is threatening to do. I mean, how are they going to do that? Short of nukes, I'm not sure that's possible. Or these Gulf state nations are going to have to cut ties with the United States. And then that takes away their support for the U.S. dollar as the fiat currency in which they trade for things like LNG and oil, but, you know, mostly LNG out of Qatar, right? And those prices just skyrocketed for obvious reasons. But they sell in dollars. And then they funnel those dollars back into the treasury by purchasing treasuries or, you know, U.S. debt, or they funnel them back into various commercial projects in the United States. If those countries no longer exist, then that money funnel stops. And it's not really money laundering. It's a cycle of commercial flows of the money. And those flows, especially the money that purchases debt, that is, you know, Qatar, whatever nation comes to the U.S., here's $100 billion of your money back, and you just give us $100 billion of IOUs in the form of treasuries. Well, that really helps the Trump administration spend more money and print more money, because they never have to be held accountable as long as the Gulf nations don't sell the treasuries. And of course, they're all coerced to hold on to the treasuries. But China is offloading them little by little. Japan is offloading them. And nobody who is sane anywhere around the world right now is buying more treasuries other than the countries that are forced to do so, which is the Gulf states, you see? So Iran is threatening, in fact, the debt Ponzi scheme of the United States of America. That's a big part of this. But let's continue, because Professor Jiang has a lot more to say. In fact, I should let him talk more. I've been talking too much. Here he is.
The Gulf states are really the linchpin of the American economy. So what they do is they sell petrodollars, and then they recycle the petrodollars back into the American economy through the investments in the stock market. And right now, we know that the entire American economy is propped up by AI investments in data centers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes from the Gulf states. So if the Gulf states are no longer able to sell oil, and they're no longer able to finance this AI bubble in the United States, then this AI bubble will burst, and with it will burst as well the entire American economy, which is really a financial Ponzi scheme.
Right.
So that's a dire situation that the markets are facing right now.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, sir, an Amazon data center was literally hit in the UAE. And now, of course, big tech companies, which were looking at the UAE as a major potential data center investment hub with cheap and abundant energy, probably going to be rethinking that. We also wanted to talk to you about munitions. We can put this next one up here on the screen. The United States is racing to accomplish Iran mission before munitions run out. This is specifically around interceptor math. There's a famous video just from yesterday in Israel, which shows a single Iranian ballistic missile, which is being targeted by some 11 different interceptors, all of which miss. Most of those come from the United States, not to mention all of the different bases, the GCC countries that you just talked about, and the asymmetry of the cost. It's $1 million for a missile, tens of millions per interceptor in some of these cases. With these munitions running out, how does that change the global picture? So you're in China, obviously. Much of the stocks in Asia of the United States are likely to have to be cannibalized if this were to go on. How is that going to affect the global picture here?
Right. So my first point is that the United States military is not designed to fight a 21st century war. Remember that the military-industrial complex came to being after World War II, and it was designed to fight the Cold War. And the Cold War was really about muscle flexing, about who was able to send people up into space, who was the first to get the person on the moon, who had the more complex missile systems. And so the entire American military strategy revolves around very sophisticated technology that costs a lot of money to build. And that's what the American air defense system is basically. And that's why we're seeing this asymmetry, as you point out, in this war, where you have these $1 million missiles trying to take out these $50,000 drones. And it's not sustainable in the long term. And so what we're seeing is really the puncturing of the aura of invincibility and invability that sustained American hegemony for the past 20 years, especially after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And this is really a reordering of not just the global economy, because this signals the collapse of the petrodollar, and with it, the entire US dollar-based reserve currency system, but also the global hegemony of the United States. We're moving towards a multipolar world.
Professor, this morning, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth was asked a question about potential ground troops in Iran. He refused to rule out that possibility. And he said, you know, oh, well, we're not going to project to you what we will or will not do, but we don't want to, you know, rule anything out. We will do what it takes. Do you think that America will end up invading Iran from the ground, since it's already becoming relatively clear they won't be able to accomplish the goal of regime change or even regime collapse using just air power alone?
Right. So everyone says that the worst calamity that could happen in the United States is if it were to send ground troops into Iran. At the same time, the United States are committed to regime change in Iran. We've never had a precedent in history where you were able to regime change from the air alone. You need ground troops. And so unfortunately, what's going to happen over the next few months is that pressure will build on America to send ground troops, especially from the GCC countries and from Israel, which are being pounded right now by the Iranians. So remember that if the GCC countries, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, Bahrain, if they go, then the petrodollar goes with them. So the Americans need to protect these countries. And these countries are going to demand that either the Americans bribe the Iranians to cease, and this is like $5 trillion in indemnity, okay? Mm-hmm. Or send ground troops to wipe out the Iranian threat once and for all. And I know that there's no political will for ground troops to be used against Iran among the American people. But remember that 70-80% of American people was against initial strikes against Iran in the first place.
So there, Professor Jiang is talking about the ramifications if the U.S. decides to send in ground troops, which seems to be inevitable. It may take, it could take a couple of months, actually, for the ground troops to be gathered there. And, you know, you have to send in, frankly, you have to send in hundreds of thousands to even have an impact. You know, you can't send in 10,000 troops. They would all just be slaughtered. You'd have to send in hundreds of thousands of troops, turning Iran into a modern-day Vietnam. And if the United States does that, that's the ultimate trap, because the losses of U.S. soldiers will be severe, and the war will escalate. It will explode in severity and in regional disruptions, because think about it. How long, you know, even if you sent in 1 million U.S. troops, which we don't have. We don't have an extra million troops, okay? We might have 1 million total, including all the desk jobs and the cooks and everything. But we don't have 1 million troops that can be sent in to Iran. I mean, what we might have maybe 200,000 or something like that, maybe 300 at most. And, you know, half of those are obese, by the way, or you know, overweight, let's say. They're barely mobile, you know? They've been sitting at the desk too long. Soldiers are supposed to be mobile. That's not the case. You know, they're eating Burger King on base. So they can't really run around, you know? I mean, they're just... I'm sorry to be so blunt about it, but that's just the truth. So if they get sent into Iran, they're going to get slaughtered. And then we're going to be looking at such tremendous political blowback in the United States, and the perception of the total defeat of the U.S. military by Iran, which would give Iran tremendous credibility in the world, and it would clearly be the pivot point to a multipolar world. Because if the world realizes that the United States of America cannot defeat Iran, which I believe it cannot, then clearly it can't defeat Russia, and it clearly can't defeat China. I mean, it can't even consider the possibility of trying to defeat China. So this changes everything, and Trump is walking right into the trap, and he's going to completely obliterate the perception of U.S. invincibility around the world. Now, there's been a statement issued from the new supreme leader of the Islamic Revolution of Iran, a man named Alireza Arafi. Here's what he said just today. The time for negotiations is over. The United States has chosen to cross the red line, the line of irreparable harm. By launching this war, they have signed their own death warrant. They don't know when or how the axe will fall, but we hold the reins. He's not wrong, actually. He's not wrong that Trump has signed the death warrant of the U.S. empire, I believe, and so does Professor Jiang. Now it's just a matter of how it plays out. Anyway, the supreme leader, as he's called, Arafi, he continues, they brandish the nuclear specter like a scarecrow, blinded by their arrogance. They have no idea of the true extent of our power or what we are prepared to unleash. As for Israel, he says, its fate is sealed. Every strike, every crime, every act of suffering they have inflicted will come back to haunt them. They will remain in our sights, exposed, vulnerable, hunted. We walk in the shadow of the leader, and every step is a lightning bolt. And he says, Iran does not bend, Iran wins, always. So that's the mood from Iran. It's not capitulation. It's not, oh, you know, please stop bombing us and we'll give you whatever you want. No. In fact, Iran is saying we're not even going to negotiate with you anymore because the U.S. empire never negotiates in good faith. The negotiations are just a cover story for assassinating the negotiators and launching surprise attacks as they did last summer, and they're doing it again, or the U.S. just did it again now with Israel. So apparently there are no more negotiations possible. And now it's going to be an all-out war. So, nope, it's not going to end in a weekend. It's not going to end in 4 weeks, as Trump is now saying. And if Trump sends ground troops in, that's going to be the death of the U.S. empire in terms of the global credibility, the ability of the U.S. to project power, you know, militarily, the weight of the U.S. currency, etc. This is how it ends. So Professor Jiang has even more. So let's give him a listen. Here we go.
So this is the key question. Why do they do this? I think there are three possibilities, okay? And I think all three possibilities are valid. The first is the idea of hubris. If you look at history, this is how empires behave. So the Mindoro kidnapping was quick, successful, and it was adrenaline rush for Trump. And that made him overconfident in the capacity of the American military, okay? So hubris is a factor, and we see this throughout history. Why did Hitler invade Stalin? Because he conquered Europe really easily, and he thought he was invincible, right? And that led to the destruction of the German army in the Soviet Union. So hubris is a factor. Then you have to look at internal political calculus, where even though America does not benefit from this war against Iran, Trump himself personally benefits. Why? Because the Saudis and Israelis are bribing him to attack Iran. Remember that the Saudis invested $2 billion in the private equity fund of Jared Kushner, who is the son-in-law of Donald Trump. And the Israelis, through Miriam Adelson, have been financing Trump's political career, right? So Miriam Adelson, a few months back, said that she will put up $250 million if Trump were to run a third term. So Trump is getting a lot of financial and political support from the Saudis and Israelis. Also remember that if this war goes sideways and Trump is forced to use ground troops, he will probably get approval from Congress. And this will give him emergency war powers, which will allow him to influence the midterms. So Trump is thinking about a third term. And I think at the ballot box, he probably won't get it. But if there's a war going on, and you can delay elections, and you have emergency war powers, and people rally around the flag, then he probably will get a third term.
So did you hear that? Yeah, how disturbing is that? I've said much the same thing, by the way. Professor Jiang is explaining that Trump intends to escalate to world war, you know, to get the United States into a war, possibly a nuclear strike on a U.S. city, maybe a false flag, who knows? And then to use that to declare a really big state of emergency, and I know legally really big doesn't count, but in the minds of the American people, it does. In the minds of the American people, they will tend to acquiesce to whatever demands the government makes if we're in a new world war. So Trump could use that power, just like was used in Ukraine, to cancel elections. So Trump could remain in power indefinitely with no elections, as literally a military dictator over America. He wouldn't need an election to a third term. He would just stay in power past his existing term, and if anybody challenged him, they would just disappear, you know? And through this, Trump could suspend the Constitution effectively, as he's already done, you know, with ICE. He could banish the First Amendment. He could shut down the free press. He could banish the Second Amendment, not allow Americans to have firearms. He could banish the Fourth and Fifth Amendments, and so on. And he's already shown his willingness to do things like that with the ICE activities in Minnesota. So Trump needs a big war to have a big emergency in order to stay in office, even when he's unpopular. And one of my theories about this is that this possibility explains why Trump no longer cares about what his voters wanted him to do. Because he promised the voters, we're going to have peace, no more wars in the Middle East. In fact, I've got a bunch of video clips about that. He promised the American voters, we're going to, you know, arrest all the people in the Epstein files, etc. We're going to arrest the traitors. We're going to, you know, lock her up, drain the swamp. He's no longer pursuing any of those things, not even pretending to, because in his mind, that's no longer necessary. You know, he lied enough on the campaign trail to get elected. Now the lies don't matter anymore. So he's just telling the truth at this point. It was to say, yeah, we don't care about you. We don't care about you anymore. We care about Israel. We care about our Zionist masters at this point. That's who's calling the shots. So the whole campaign of America First was a lie. MAGA was a lie. MAHA was obviously a lie because Trump is now offering federal protection for glyphosate herbicide, linked to cancer and many other problems. So all of it was a lie. It was just necessary to get Trump into power to where he could start World War III, declare a national emergency, cancel elections, cancel the First and Second Amendments. That's what's next in this plan, which is what Professor Jiang is actually explaining here. But there's even more to this, so let's continue with what he has to say.
That is very important. It's an eschatological factor where, if you look at the Epstein files, it's clear that we are run by secret societies. It's clear that the world is run by these individuals who have a lot of power. We don't know who they are, but they control the military. They control the national security apparatus. And these people, there are different names for these people. You can call them the Illuminati. And the Illuminati are composed of three major groups, okay? You have the Jesuits, who control the Vatican. You have the Sabbatine Frankists, which control the modern state of Israel today. And you have the Freemasons, which control the national security apparatus of the United States. And they believe that Israel, this war in the Middle East, is key to the end times in creating heaven on earth. So it's almost like a script that they're following, even though it doesn't make any geopolitical sense. Okay, so I would say that these three are the best reasons why this is happening.
So wow, right there. I mean, he just comes out and names the top three groups that he calls part of the Illuminati, that are the globalist controllers with their secret societies and all their occult stuff. You didn't used to be able to say that on a news program without being called a complete nut job. Now, it's more and more common knowledge that that's exactly how the world is configured. That's exactly who's in charge and running things, and everything is scripted from 9/11 to this current war, the war on Iran. Trump never had any intention of negotiating with Iran or finding peace. It was always just pretend in order to actually cause World War III, because that's what the Zionists think they need in order for God to come back and intervene and save them from total destruction by the rest of the world. That's their end times cult. That's, you know, it's an apocalyptic end times cult. And Professor Jiang was just explaining that with some good detail right there. And he's right. That's exactly what's happening. So it's no longer conspiracy theory to talk about this. It's all out in the open. They are starting wars on purpose. There is mass human depopulation underway. Obviously, they're not interested in peace. They're not interested in human abundance or even the continued existence of the vast majority of the human population. So the takeaway from this is that you and I have to, number one, be extremely informed and aware. And then secondly, we have to be decentralized out of the system. We have to be prepared, which is something I've been urging everybody to do for almost 25 years now. You have to have your own food supply, your own natural medicine, grow as much as you can of your own herbs, etc. You have to decentralize from the system. You have to have your own honest money, which is gold and silver or private crypto, for example. You need to have your own knowledge base. That's why you should download the free AI model that we made available last year. That's at brightanswers.ai. You can actually download the full LLM. It's a GGUF file, and you can install it and run it on your local machine. And by the way, Qwen just released new 3.5 models, including a 9 billion parameter model that I'm looking at training as an update. And if I can manage to train that model with our knowledge base, you know, all of our articles and interviews and things like that, then you can have that model free of charge as well. And so you can have all your local knowledge, the, you know, endless how-to manuals. Basically, you just ask your own AI engine what to do. So take every step that you can to become more self-reliant and to decentralize. That's the way that you're going to make it through all of this. And of course, our online store, healthrangerstore.com, is where you can get lab-verified, tested foods, superfoods, nutritional supplements. Almost everything's organic. It's all tested for glyphosate and heavy metals and microbiology, salmonella, yeast and mold, etc., and other things as well. We are the only food and supplement retailer in the world that conducts this level of scrutiny and testing. So check it out, healthrangerstore.com. Also get prepared in every way you can. Check out my rangerdeals.com website, because there I've got affiliate deals with various companies that can help you get prepared. Whether it's Goldbacks or gold and silver or de-googled phones or what have you. Even there's a body armor supplier there. Just a few companies that I've chosen to partner with as an affiliate, because I think that their solutions are really ideal for your preparedness and your survival through whatever's coming. So get ready, because World War III is going to explode, and it's all by design. And it's an excuse to strip away your rights, your power, and to achieve global depopulation, mass chaos, supply chain disruptions, and engineered famine at the same time. That's what's coming. Finally, read my articles on all of this at naturalnews.com, and you can find more of my videos and podcasts and interviews at brightvideos.com. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for listening. Take care.
If you don't have a lot of money saved up, which most people don't, or, you know, you sell your house that you've had for a long time, you're going to get some equity out of it. You can put that down. Even that, you're looking at it, you're like, young people can forget it. They can't buy a new car. That's 50, 60 grand. They can't buy a house. That's $700,000, $800,000. You know, they can't. So if you're young, you don't have any future, and you don't even have a present, much less a future.
Welcome to today's interview, part two of our interview with Garland Nixon. We've had an extraordinary conversation in part one already about the Middle East, about the domestic situation, MAGA, politics, lots of things like that. And in this segment, we're going to talk about technology and China and Russia and maybe some other interesting things. So I'm welcoming back Garland Nixon. Welcome, Mr. Nixon. Really enjoyed part one with you. And I just want to give people your YouTube channel. It's Garland Nixon, just like it sounds, and the handle is Garland N on YouTube. So please follow Garland Nixon on YouTube, and welcome back. I really enjoyed part one with you, so I'm looking forward to this.
Thank you.
All right, so I want to ask you, let's talk about China. China is clearly engaged in tremendous innovation in space of AI. I'm an AI developer. I also speak Chinese because I lived in Taiwan, et cetera. China's leading the world in robotics, in drones, in electric vehicles, in industry, automation of manufacturing. There's no comparison. China today reminds me of the lead that the U.S. had post-World War II in the 1950s. What is your overall understanding of China and its role in our global economy right now, and what would you like to add?
Well, a couple of things. You know, there are different types of economies, right? Russia has kind of a mixed economy where they do a lot of commodities and they do technology and they do, they do agriculture, and which I think is very, very healthy. One of the healthiest economies I think you could possibly have is a diverse economy where, you know, you can produce your own energy, produce your own food, and you can produce the items that you need. That gives you kind of that autarkical ability to sustain yourself.
Like steel. They have a massive steel industry.
Exactly.
Yeah, they make their own stuff.
Exactly. Now you go to China and they have a huge industrial capacity. And that in itself, just having that industrial capacity, making things forces you to constantly innovate. You're making something, you need a new way to make it, a different way to make it. So having an industrial capacity. Also, the other thing is this. You have to invest in infrastructure, because when you got all of these factories going, you got to have your electrical grid that will handle the factories. And as you're expanding, you got to have an electrical grid that expands. You got to have the waters. You got to have all of the infrastructure that's necessary to make things and to transport those things, and et cetera, right? To support that industrial capacity. And if you look at the United States, we built this gigantic infrastructure in the 40s and 50s and 60s, but at that time, we had tremendous industrial capacity. And of course, we needed, you know, the trains and planes and automobiles, all the stuff that was necessary to support that capacity. When they decided that they could make a lot more money by basically moving the labor force to outside of the United States to get cheaper labor so that they could increase their profits. Yes, it worked. But the problem is now you don't have an industrial society anymore. Now you have a financialized society. And then, you know the rest. Get rid of Glass-Steagall, on and on and on. And now all the money is made with asset-backed securities and, you know, et cetera.
Derivatives. CDOs and the big short and all that.
So the reality is this. There is no need or reason or even ability for the United States to do technological or industrial innovation, because we don't have, there's no industry. It's just not going to happen. Magically, somebody would just have to sit in a bank and say, I got an idea. We should come up with a new idea for drills, maybe a new type of steel or something that would make it harder. No, that's not what they're doing. There's nobody doing that because there's no factories doing that. So we cut our own throats, basically. To make some extra money. And it worked for a tiny percentage of Americans.
So you've hit upon something really critical here, because what Trump likes to do is announce these big plans that some foreign investor is going to build a factory somewhere in America. Oh, we're going to have a plant. He likes to call them plants. We're going to have a plant in Texas. We're going to have a plant in Arizona. The problem with that, which is being quickly discovered, is that a factory doesn't exist by itself. It's part of an ecosystem of a supply chain. And if you don't have those domestic supplies to get the parts, to get the components, to get the lasers or whatever you're building, then you're pretty much screwed. And then what Trump has done is, of course, he slapped all these tariffs on China, which is where a lot of the U.S. factories would get those components. So it's like, hey, you got to set up a plant in America. And if you do that, then you're like, how do we get our parts? Because you punished, you set these punitive tariffs and now we can't get the parts. We can't get the high purity acids, for example, for, microchip lithography processes, et cetera. And then you waste $500 million of microchips. It's all ruined because there is a part per billion of some contaminant in the acid. Like, that's happened in America. So continue this, whatever you want to say about this, but it's a whole ecosystem. You can't just like push a pin on the board and say, oh, now we're going to manufacture this.
Right. And yes. And here's the other part of it that's important, why you may not be able to catch up, because it is a developing ecosystem. You know, it's like as you build factories that do this, you realize, well, we need this kind of acid or we need whatever this particular thing is. And so we need to set up a supply system so we'll have those things. And as you expand, your entire industrial capacity expands as one. So that all of your factories need steel or whatever, or what particular alloys, and you, okay. So you now have this huge industrial capacity, but you have all of the elements that feed the industrial capacity, and you have the infrastructure, because these things all grew together,
right,
kind of organically. Now, here I am watching you do that for 20 years, and I say, oh, I better start. I got to catch up tomorrow. Well, I can't, because I can't build the infrastructure that you've been building for 20 years. I can't. The factories, some of the things that you have, some of the supply chains that China has that feeds that industrial powerhouse that they have, they only found out by screwing up and needing it. You know, it was an organic creation. So what are we going to do? Just try to copy everything that they had? And what are we going to do that? And it took them 20 years. We're going to do it in five? So right. We have set ourselves back so far that what the United States would have to do, in my opinion, is come up with our own model for how we're going to do it. What they're saying is, that's how China did it. Let's copy them. Too late. You got to come up with your own model.
Garland, listen to this about the power grid. The power grid, you know, we're 20 years too late on building out power infrastructure. So listen to these numbers, because I ran the math on this in great detail. China, in an aggregate year, the total power they produce is over 10,000 terawatt hours. Okay, it's well over 10,000. The United States produces 4,400. At least I think those were 2023 numbers. So we're less than half. Trump promised to build 10 AP1000 nuclear power plants, which I think are built by Westinghouse. If you do the math on that, that would raise America from 4,400 terawatt hours to 4,500 terawatt hours. So it's not even a drop in the bucket. Meanwhile, China is building a massive new hydroelectric dam project that will dwarf anything in the world, actually, which means that when it comes to, for example, AI research or AI inference, which is a power-hungry industry, that China is going to be able to outproduce and outcompete the United States just because it has cheap available electricity, plus it's getting gas from Russia through that new proposed pipeline that's going to cross Mongolia. So the U.S., we're 20 years too late. And it also means it's not all Trump's fault, by the way. It's not all Trump's fault. What do you say?
I agree with you 100%. These were decisions that were made by the so-called titans of industry. And the decisions were made was, let's close down the infrastructure here and let's just use China's infrastructure. And in using, or Bangladesh or Vietnam, you know, we basically use the infrastructure of other countries because we can make more money doing that. And it worked. The good news is it worked. The bad news is it worked. And so you don't need industry anymore. And so we don't have it. We don't have, as you know, it's interesting you said that, 10 nuclear power plants wouldn't even move the needle.
Nope, hardly at all.
But even then, here's the other issue.
Oh, and they're only going to be ready in the 2040s. It's not tomorrow.
And by then, China will have lapped us 10 times over.
Exactly.
Or they may have come up with some nuclear way. You know, they'll be getting that, hydrogen or whatever that stuff is that comes off the dark side of the moon where they can do nuclear power plants. And by then, you know, we'll be basically in horse and buggies compared to them. That's the direction we're going. We'll be effectively in horse and buggies because of China, because of decisions that were made. And now we're going to go start a bunch of wars. That's going to help.
I know,
that we could be spending on infrastructure. That's money what about educating people? We need STEM. First of all, even if we had everything that we want, we do not have the engineers and we do not have the physicists.
That's
we
right.
do not have the our education system is shot to hell. Our schools are old. They don't have the latest technology. I was watching this thing of these Chinese schools, and they've got these big, like the whole wall is like a computer screen, and they're beaming information from school to school, and they're teaching kids all this stuff. Our kids barely got, you know, heat and light in a school. We spend money on everything, but investing it in our future and investing it in our people. Instead, it's all getting laundered off by bio research lab in Ukraine, or, you know, some other military boondoggle where we're building a plane that costs us $200 million.
Yeah, I think America is now really, frankly, in the late stage pillaging phase of the collapse of the empire. It's like you look at Trump and the people around him and the military, they're all just trying to say, how much can we extract from this collapsing system? This is what it looks like.
Yeah. You know what it kind of reminds me of? And I was involved in this one time in a corporation that I work for. And that is where someone comes in and they, you know, they do the hostile takeover. They buy a corporation without any intent of continuing to run the corporation. They buy a corporation and they just basically pull everything. Oh, how much money can this corporation buy? Borrow the 10 million. What do they have? Well, they got these machines, sell them off. Consulting fees. And when you get this thing in maximum debt, And then, because basically you're saying this corporation is going to come over, I'm going to extract every penny of equity and potential equity out of this corporation before it goes under. I get the feeling that these money laundering, you know, Epstein class, that they're looking at it like, the United States is done. Let's try to extract every bit of equity out of it that we can before it finally craps out. And then we'll move on to bigger and brighter things.
I think that's exactly what it is. Well, like when I see Trump and he's the head of this board of peace, and then he gets $10 billion transferred to his board from the U.S. government, it just looks like total corruption to me. You know, it looks like money laundering. Like, well, so is there any accountability for that $10 billion? Does anybody oversee? No, it's offshore. It's in the hands of Trump. It smacks of really the Bidens and Ukraine and all the kickbacks from Ukraine. It's the same thing. Nothing's changed. It's just different people, same looting.
Yeah, that's the problem I think we're looking at. And that's what you're saying. That is the system we have now. That's what it does. The outcome is the intention, as they say. If you want to know what something's designed to do, well, then you can try to figure out what it's designed to do, or you can just look at what it does. Well, I don't know what it's designed to do, but I can tell you what it does. And Whatever it does, we can imply that was the design. When we look at what's happening, you got people in Ukraine now, like caught with $100 million in cash, still in the package from the Federal Reserve, and they go to Israel. Wait a minute. How do you steal $100 million, probably a lot more, from the United States? You go to Israel, where we're giving them billions of dollars, and say, oh boy, I'm free. They can't get me now. We can't somehow say to Israel, that guy stole $100 million from us?
See that?
Please, can you send them back? No, I guess we can't.
What the American people are largely failing to understand is that the reason they are impoverished, the reason they can't afford food and housing and health insurance, is because of all the money printing theft and the money laundering that's taking place through Israel, through Ukraine, through whatever, through the wars, through the Pentagon. That's, you know, I think most Americans don't connect these things. Like, why do I work so hard every day and I can't get ahead? There's a reason for that. The reason is these crooks in D.C. that keep printing money, right?
Exactly. You know, like I sold my house and I'm shopping for another house. I live in an apartment now, shopping for a house. My God, man. The prices of houses is unbelievable. And I'm a middle class guy. I'm not rich. I'm not broke. I'm okay. I should be able to afford a house. And I look at it and I'm like, I can buy a house, but, you know, what I thought I should be able to get based on what's available to me, it's unbelievable now. And you look at it and you're like, if you don't have a lot of money saved up, which most people don't, or, you know, you sell your house that you've had for a long time, you're going to get some equity out of it. You can put that down. Even that, you're looking at it and you're like, young people can forget it. They can't buy a new car. That's 50, 60 grand. They can't buy a house. That's $700,000, $800,000. You know, they can't. So if you're young, you don't have any future and you don't even have a present, much less a future.
You're exactly right. And, you know, the psychological impact of this is really strenuous on an entire generation. But it's even worse than that, I would argue, because I want to bring in the AI picture here. Now, you know, I'm an AI developer. And I know a lot about AI because I've been building with it for 2 years and I've built successful platforms. I can assure you that the job replacements of AI will accelerate this year and next year and the year beyond. And it's not going to be just the entry-level kids coming out of college who are already struggling to find jobs. It's also going to be middle managers, decision makers, logistics people, because AI is advancing its capabilities into higher and higher positions within the corporate structure. I don't hear anybody really understanding or expressing that they're ready for this to happen in America. Have you thought about this issue and what does it mean when entire sectors of the economy vanish? Like, for example, I'm sorry to keep going, but when Anthropic just announced the other day that they have a new engine that reads COBOL, which is, you know, a programming language, back in the day.
Fortran and COBOL.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. And Pascal and whatever. Yeah. IBM lost, I think, $30 billion in market valuation instantly because IBM depends on service contracts for maintaining COBOL language for ATMs. So boom, COBOL programmers wiped out. Happened in one afternoon, basically. Like, that's going to continue to accelerate. Have you thought about where this is going?
Absolutely. I mean, think about this. Grok or whoever, write me a lawsuit against so-and-so. Write me a will. Oh, well, you know what? I don't need a lawyer anymore, do I? I write the lawsuit and my adversary there writes some kind of a document to the court that I have to respond to. Guess what? I upload it and say, write me a response. I handle my whole case without an attorney. And get, so all of a sudden now you don't need attorneys. You know what's coming when you go to the doctors and they're, all right, doctor, I got this kind of problem. You'll go in, it'll examine your blood, this and that. You'll put a few things in and it'll tell you this is wrong with you or whatever the case may be. So basically, we are creating an environment wherein people will not just, you could say workers, people will become unnecessary to the ruling elite. And I would argue to some extent, based on what I've seen the last couple of years, they already consider us, unnecessary. True. We are an unnecessary aggravation to them. They sure act like it anyway.
Yeah, that's true. And the examples you gave, legal and medicine, but also think about architecture, for example. You're not going to need an architect. You're going to just talk to the AI agent and say, okay, I want a house that does this and this, and it'll draw one up, and you'll say, okay, I don't like this, let's move the kitchen, whatever. It'll work with you, and in the end, it'll produce all the construction blueprints, all the materials, estimated costs, 3D renderings, walkthrough, fly-through, freaking everything. Yep. No architect needed. Like, I think that's possible now, actually.
I would think so.
That's not even years away. But nobody, it's going to put the government in the position under the Trump administration, unless he's impeached and removed, which is a possibility, but it's going to put the Trump administration in a position where I think we're going to have, uprisings of unemployed people demanding government, basic income payments, UBI. Do you see that as a possibility as well?
Yeah. And so I do have my concerns because for a while, starting during COVID, I got some real concerns about, when they came out with, some areas literally came out with an app. And if you wanted to get on a train or do this or that, and, you had to have this app. I know in New York, they had this stuff. And I thought, I can see the time coming, when we talk about a universal basic income and things like that. But I can see, and this is just my kind of conspiracy here, okay, you get in that situation, but then the government says, oh, good news, fool, we're going to give you, throw me a number, $5,000 everybody gets a month, and you get your app on your phone, and you get your, digital currency of $5,000 a month. Isn't that great? Yes, oh, that's just wonderful. We all get $5,000 a month. You can go ahead and pursue your life. Now, if you were to go and you were to protest the wrong thing, it might cost you a little bit. Or if you do certain things, if you say something, if you post something wrong, well, then, your money may be less, or it may not work for certain things. Or, you use this app to pay for everything. Since nobody can afford a car anymore, that's going to bring your autonomous driving taxi there. Oh, wait a minute. You went to some protest. You did this, this, and that. You posted you've got demerits for what you posted online. I'm sorry, your self-driving taxis won't take you any further than, 5 miles from your house for 2 weeks. I just see when once you're in a situation where, which I think is ideal for them, where the government's saying, we're going to give you just enough to feed you. And by the way, that $5,000, $2,000 of it goes back to the same company, BlackRock, who owns your house. Another $1,000 goes to Verizon. Before you finish, the money, you didn't really get any money. It hit you. It passed through your app right back to the same oligarchs that own everything, except now that they can use it against you to tell you what you can and can't do and punish you financially if you don't go along with what you want to see. I see it. Ultimately, I think you're right. And I see that as a means of control in the long run.
Yeah. 100%. That economic control will be intense. And for those who don't have their own independent wealth or assets outside that system, they're going to be really prisoners to that system. In fact, I was just bringing it up as you were talking because it reminded me of the Stanford prison experiment.
Yes.
And I believe that the entire country of America is being turned into a Stanford prison experiment. And I think we saw that with the ICE agents recently in Minneapolis
who were so arrogant, like, if you film me, you're interfering with me. If you film me, I'm putting you on a list. You're going to be on a list. Or they're just shooting you or punching you or whatever. That was classic behavior that was documented in 1971 in this, where a certain class of citizens were given the right to rule over others, and they immediately turned into violent authoritarians. Do you see that too?
Yes. And the other thing is, I mean, you can see how they can kind of brainwash people to reject some of the foundational beliefs that they have, like Second Amendment, right?
Right.
Well, you have a lot of people, hey, you've got a right to own guns. And, you know, if I want to own a gun, I should be able to, blah, blah, blah. Now, all of a sudden, some guy comes out and the ICE agents, oh, he's got a gun, and they shoot him. And now the government that was came in, the administration that came in and literally said, we will protect the Second Amendment, now says, you know what? If you bring a gun to a demonstration, well, then you deserve to be shot. And I'm thinking, well, that's not what you were saying before. And by the way, if you bring a gun to a demonstration that you legally bought, legally registered, and you're legally carrying, what gives them a right to shoot you? You're not violating any law whatsoever. Well, and now they're just sending the message to you, yeah, don't worry about the Second Amendment. It only applies when we say it applies. And you got some people going along with it.
It's extraordinary. I'm so glad you brought that up, because the other thing that was really disturbing about that is Pam Bondi announcing that she knew the state of mind of the person they shot, saying that because he had a gun, he planned to, quote, massacre federal agents. Wait a second. Are you a mind reader? There's no evidence of that. There's no manifesto from this guy. Was he maybe not happy with the ICE agents? Yeah, he was not happy with them, but he was observing, and he has a right to carry a firearm. And he, you know, he had a license as well, but, you know, in some states that you have that right regardless. So I'm really glad you brought that up. But we're now in the place where we see the government itself now going to war against its own citizens, killing them, and then justifying it after the fact. Now, you have a history in law enforcement. Would that have ever flown in you know, police business or presenting a case to the judge in the past?
Well, absolutely not. I mean, I wouldn't think, you know, traditionally, you know, what we thought was, well, the Democrats are going to be more, you know, Second Amendment, and the Republicans are going to be more pro. That has been the history. What we're seeing now, to me, that is another very clear example of the duopoly. That's a very clear example. Here's what they say. We're pro Second Amendment until we get in power.
Right.
Once we get in power, yeah. And you're saying, we think it may threaten you. And if one of our guys shoots you, I don't care what he does. He's right. You know, it's like, oh, I'm anti-government, or I'm suspicious of the government until I'm in charge of it. Now I'm in charge of the government. Yeah, the government, everything the government does is right. And if you walk in here with a gun, you get shot. Who cares? The government's always right. I thought you were anti-government. You were, until you got in charge with it, in charge of it. And now the Democrats have never been more anti-Second Amendment. I mean, the Democrats said a lot of things, but I don't remember them saying, you come to if you bring a gun to a protest, then we can shoot you. I mean, looking at it, it's just, this is the uniparty. Whoever's in power says the same damn thing.
I lost respect for so many MAGA people following the shooting in Minneapolis. Well, the two shootings. But at one point, there was so much support for the government, for ICE agents, that is masked, unidentifiable ICE agents shooting this man, that I said to MAGA people on X, I said, just wait until the MAGA of 2026 finds out what MAGA did on January 6th, 2021. Because according to you today, all of you should have been shot in 2021 because you were protesting the government. You know what I mean? It's like they've completely abandoned all principles. Back then, no, we're peaceful protesters, even though we're smashing things up or whatever, but you can't attack us. Today, they're like, attack them, kill them. We're the boot. You know?
Yeah. What was the woman's name? Was it Ashley Babbitt, I think? Was she the one that got shot in January 6th?
That's right.
Remember the woman
she's the one.
And I remember I said, let me look at the video. And the video I saw, and I'm an ex-law enforcement. I looked at it and I said, they had no reason to shoot her. She was not treating, you know, she was not at that point presenting a threat to anyone's life. Was she trying to crawl through a door or something? It was locked. She probably couldn't have got it through it. But at that point, she was unarmed.
Yeah.
She did not present a threat and the actual case is Tennessee versus Garner. And under the standards of Tennessee versus Garner, she clearly did not meet the standard for the use of deadly force.
Right.
And I'm like, nah, that's wrong. And all these conservatives and, you know, so MAGA people, whatever you want to call it, are like, yeah, that was terrible. And I'm like, you're right. I agree with you. That was wrong. Now this guy gets shot, and I'm like, holy crap. He was perfectly legal. He had a gun. They took the gun from him and then shot him.
They took the gun.
And now they're like, terrible. And I'm like, don't just say it's my team, therefore it's okay.
That's right.
I put it like this. I'm anti-government, to be quite frank. I don't trust the government. I always think they're up to no good. And most of the time I'm right.
Yeah.
And I don't care who's in power. I didn't trust them when Biden was in power, and I don't trust them. These people who suddenly become pro-government goons as soon as the person that they vote for, to me, it just goes against everything I believe in politically.
Yeah, they've abandoned their principles. Well, look, Garland, we're out of time here for the interview, but I want to give you a chance to just tell people about your channel on YouTube and the kinds of topics that you generally cover.
Yes. Well, you know, I talk a lot about foreign policy. I really enjoy foreign policy. I have all kinds of guests on. You know, I have guests who are libertarian, socialist, conservative, MAGA, you name it. People from various parts of the world, economists, you know, whoever I think has something to say and I like them, they can come on my channel. I do some shows where I just talk about stuff myself. But I do a lot of foreign policy. I really enjoy. I've started doing a lot of stuff on Ukraine. And since I've just branched out into a lot of foreign policy stuff.
That's fantastic.
I think it's important.
Well, I'm a fan of your work. Like I said, I've also seen you on many other shows. So you're pretty busy. You do a lot of shows.
Yes, I do. And I enjoy it. It's not work.
Yeah, it's great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. And it's been a pleasure meeting you. This is the first time we've ever spoken, and I really enjoyed it. So thank you for all that you're doing.
All right. Thank you.
All right. All right. That was Garland Nixon, everyone. And again, his YouTube channel is just Garland Nixon. You can search for him on YouTube. It'll come right up. And you can also catch part one of this interview on brightvideos.com. And thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of the Bright Videos platform and other AI platforms, as you know. And hope you enjoyed this today. Feel free to share it, and you can repost it on other platforms and channels as well. So thanks for watching. Take care.
Pink Himalayan salt, one of the purest and healthiest salts on earth. Non-GMO, certified kosher, lab tested and trusted. Shop at healthrangerstore.com.